And now, The Mentors Radio, one of the most popular and unique shows on the air today. Here each week, remarkable CEOs and leaders, including host Tom Laurie and Dan Hesse, and their guest will mentor you, challenging your thinking about life and work. Sought after for their ethical leadership and advice, and for helping others succeed throughout their careers, now these same CEOs, the mentors, want to help you achieve your highest level of profitability, success, and personal fulfillment in life, at work, and in business. Learn more and check out the show notes at thementorsradio.com. That's thementorsradio.com. And now, here is your mentor.
Welcome. This is Tom Laurie, and we have a terrific guest mentor lined up for you today. Today, we hear a lot about spin and propaganda. It is connected in many ways with the field of public relations and journalism, but is it fair? What really is public relations, and how is it practiced by the best? To talk about this and all things related to persuasion, we have the most influential figure of modern times, Harold Burson, as our guest mentor today. He has, for more than 50 years, served as counselor to and confidant of corporate CEOs, government leaders, and heads of public sector institutions. He is the architect of the largest public relations agency in the world today, Burson Marsteller, and started practicing the concept of integrated marketing well before the term was invented. His mentoring of talent has shaped responsible communications for decades and has spawned a wave of ex-Burson PR agency startups. His insights, hard-earned over 60 years, although he's 97 right now, but the 60 years of hard work here, maybe more, were recently published in an excellent memoir, Persuasion. This is an excellent book for anyone interested in learning more about Harold, or the nitty-gritty of building a global communications firm, and most importantly, persuasion. Harold, I'm honored. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's get started. What is the essence of persuasion?
The essence of persuasion is to convince one party what another party wants that other party to do. It is as basic as eating, almost. Public relations, most people think, is something new. Actually, the cavemen practiced public relations. They practiced it in different ways. They drew pictures on the wall, beat up people with sticks. They were very persuasive people. But that was the beginnings of public relations. And, of course, it developed through the years into what I believe is a practical social science that ranks with the other social sciences because there is a established methodology, and also there are ground rules that one follows. There are probably 100 or more schools of communication in the United States today and in many other nations around the world. It is a very legitimate function for all manner of activity, business, socially, political, religious, you name it, it all involves the art of persuasion. To convince someone to adopt another person's opinion, to select one country over another to take a vacation in the selection of products. It's with people throughout their daily lives, although they seldom think of it as I'm using public relations to gain my objectives, and it will stay around as long as people stay around.
Now, With your history and the fact that you're semi-retired of sorts, are you still being called upon by people for advice on a regular basis?
I still have relationships with a number of companies that I've worked with for 30 years, 40 years. Of course, I'm not as active as I was just a few years ago, but I still get calls. I work with some very talented people in our organization. They come up to talk to me about a problem. What do you think is the right way to face this situation? And I keep busy doing that. Also, I take great pleasure in working with younger people, mentoring them, watching them grow, and it gives me a great deal of satisfaction.
Do you have some example or an example or two of some today that you've seen and read about, good examples of a PR, somebody's doing good PR and somebody that's doing bad PR?
I think what Starbucks has been, some of the things Starbucks has been doing. For example, when the African American was mistreated in one of their stores, the management of Starbucks decided that they had neglected to really indoctrinate their sales force and their operating force on how to treat people. And they closed every Starbucks in the United States a full day to give them lessons in how Starbucks wanted to treat its customers. I thought that was a very effective and socially acceptable way to respond to that situation.
Well, great. Now, we have to, as you know, pay some bills, so I need to go to a break. And when we return, we're going to continue our discussion with Harold Burson. And in the next segment, we're going to talk about his journey.
And now, back to The Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back, and this is your host, Tom Laurie. And this week, we are talking to Harold Burson, the architect of what was the largest public relations agency in the world, Burson Marsteller, and just recently slipped to number three. But according to Harold, they're going to be back on top soon. We're going to come back to the practice of PR in a few minutes, Harold. But first, tell us about your own journey, how you not only got into, but you created the business, and you had an interesting journey that involved the Nuremberg trials and a switch from journalism or start in journalism to PR. Maybe you can share your story with us.
Well, I have had a very fortunate life. And have had a lot of support from many people who have helped me along the way. I've also had the good fortune that I really have never had a setback at any stage of my career. Every step led to a higher level for me. And it started actually, when I was 3 years old, my father, who had a high school education, my mother and father both came from England, and my father was an omnivorous reader, and he started teaching me to read when I was 3 years old, and my mother said by the time I was four, I was really reading, and when I started school, I started in the first grade when I was 6 years old. At that time, Memphis had not yet adopted kindergartens. My first year of school was 1936. And I was in this classroom for 2 days, and someone came and led me out of the room and took me to another classroom, and I found out that was the second grade. And I stayed there for about 4 days. Someone came and took me to another room, and that was the third grade. So I started school actually in the third grade, but with a great handicap. While my father had taught me to read, he never taught me to write in script. I could print block letters, but back in those days when I started school, penmanship was really a very important subject, and schools emphasized it a great deal. And I remember it's one of the most difficult tasks that I ever undertook in my lifetime was learning how to do Spencerian writing. Fortunately, my teacher was very sympathetic, and she would have me stay over a half hour or so on most days that I was in the third grade, and she would personally give me writing lessons. So the result of that was that I graduated high school at 15, and I graduated college at 19.
Hmm. Wow.
And when I was about 12 years old, there was an announcement over the school radio system for volunteers for the student newspaper. And I was very familiar with newspapers because of my father exposed me to them so much during my early days. And I volunteered, and decided very quickly that I wanted to be a reporter, a journalist, and also that I wanted to go to New York and work for the New York Times. And when the time came for me to graduate high school, go to college, I had a problem because I knew that I was going to have to, in effect, pay my own way through school. And what had happened was that I had been appointed by this teacher, one of the teachers who was in charge of the school newspaper, to be the correspondent to the Memphis Commercial Appeal, which at that time published a Sunday page covering the activities of the 7 public high schools in Memphis at that time. And I got to know everybody practically on the staff of the paper, and one of the editors after a time asked me if I would like to be the summer substitute for the copy boys who were on their summer vacation. A copy boy is basically a messenger who took the copy from the teletype and gave it to the different editors. One of the editors who was in charge of what they call the tri-states, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Tennessee, you know, they all come together. And the Commercial Appeal had coverage in really four states, those three neighboring states in West Tennessee. And they appointed me the correspondent from the University of Mississippi to the Commercial Appeal, and it paid 14 cents a column inch of what you had published. At that time, you could go to Ole Miss and probably very few other southern public universities for about $700 or $800 a year, a school year. And that job from the paper, if you worked hard enough, you could earn $700 or $800 in a school year. And that's how I paid my way through school. And also, that sort of guaranteed me a job on the paper after I graduated. If I had had bus fare and enough to feed myself for 3 months, I would probably have gone directly to New York, because I wanted to work for the New York Times. But I didn't have the wherewithal to do that, and I went to work for the newspaper, and I had the good fortune to have been assigned to cover West Tennessee.
Well, we're gonna have to break here, and we're gonna come back, and I want you to talk a little bit about the Nuremberg trials, and then we're gonna talk about the building of Burson Marsteller and your entrepreneurial role.
And now, back to the Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is your host, Tom Laurie, and this week we are talking to Harold Burson, who is considered by many to be the most influential person in modern times. He built one of the largest public relations agencies in the world, Burson Marsteller, which most people are most familiar with. Harold, you went off, you were telling the story about getting involved in newspapers and being a journalist, and you wound up covering the Nuremberg trials. Could you tell the audience a little bit about your journey that took you to Nuremberg and what you learned from that?
I worked for the newspaper for only about 5 or 6 months, and after that, I went to work for a large engineering and building company that had one of the largest contracts that was ever given in the state of Tennessee by the federal government to build a large shell loading plant, a company that was based in New York and Cleveland. And I decided when World War II broke out that I was not going to let the war passed without my being in uniform. And so I could have stayed out because I was working for this defense contractor doing public relations for him. And toward the end of 1943, I was wrong. We were in Washington a great deal, and the man I worked for, I traveled with the CEO of the company that I worked for, and he took me into almost every meeting that he attended, and it appears that the war was going to end sometime toward the end of 43 or into 44, and so I told him that I was going to resign and asked my draft board to draft me so that I could get into service, which I did at the end of 1943. And because I had worked for an engineering and building company, they put me in, assigned me to an engineer combat group, which is a group, their mission is they do the road building and bridging for the infantry and artillery, and they also are in charge of mining and demining. And I got attached to a mining company, and about 5 weeks after the invasion in Normandy, found myself with a group of my fellow soldiers pulling mines out of the hedgerows in Normandy. And fortunately, I withstood all that. And I had a lot of connections in Washington. I was trying to get out of the engineers into something like Stars and Stripes, the newspaper, or AFN, American Forces Network, the radio network of the military in Europe. And I got my transfer 1 week before the end of the war in Europe. And that was really had a lot of great advantages to it. I was transferred to American Forces Network to their news staff. And the best part of it was their headquarters was in Paris. And I got to live in Paris for 5 months after the war. And that was probably about the best time that a young American male could ever have lived in Paris.
Hold on 1 second. This is Tom Loarie. You're listening to the Mentors Radio Show. Today we're talking to Harold Burson, who is considered by many to be the most influential person in modern times. Go ahead, Harold, with your story about Nuremberg.
I worked for 5 months writing the newscast, and I was called up to the commanding officer's office one day in early November, and he said I was at that time 23 years old, and he said, how would you like to go up to Nuremberg and cover the Nuremberg trial? Well, that was, going to be a plum assignment, and we had talked about it on the staff, and I was confident that I had no chance of getting the assignment because we had some really top-notch professionals, news people on the staff, and I figured one of them would get the assignment. One of the principal reasons that I got the assignment was I had gotten into the Army late, so I was going to be around for longer than almost anybody else on the news staff. And apparently they felt that I had done a good job up to that time, and I got the assignment, and I covered the trial for the first 5 months, and I left it after the major defendants testified, and the reason is that I wanted to come back home and really get on with my life.
Well, we're going to take the break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about controversial clients you've had, crisis management, and I want to pick up again on the building of the agency and your pioneering work in public relations.
Okay.
We're talking to Harold Burson.
And now, back to the Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is your host, Tom Loarie, and this week we're talking to Harold Burson, the architect of one of the largest PR agencies in the world, Burson Marsteller. We're going to talk right now about crisis management and the future of PR with Harold. And I have with me Charles Versace, who is the president of Versace Communications, which is based here in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's a marketing and PR consultancy that has served the global life science industry for more than 30 years. Now, formerly, Charles was a science reporter for the Milwaukee Journal, and he has a PhD in biology. And crisis management is an area that is very interesting to Charles, and he has a question for you.
Thanks, Tom. Hi, Harold. Charles here again. One thing I just want to say, it's really an honor to be speaking with you. Never in my life would have I imagined that I'd be here speaking with the founder of Burson Marsteller, who was years ago one of our competitors and, of course, still is. That said, I just wanted to just kind of talk about crisis management. And one of the areas that really sticks out is the J&J Tylenol poison pill crisis back in 1982. I'm sure a lot of people are aware and remember that episode where now today the J&J case study is a gold standard for corporate crisis management. And I'm just wondering, what were some of the lessons learned in this regard, and what was Burson's role in helping the CEO, James Burke, whose decision was guided by people before profits position?
Well, we were very, very fortunate that Jim Burke was CEO of Johnson & Johnson at that time. And the reason was he was a very smart individual in the first place, but he always wanted to be challenged. And he would readily admit when somebody had a better idea than he did. And the other part about him was that he saw immediately the magnitude of what that could do to the company from a standpoint of losing a lot of its customers. You know, J&J then was more associated with babies than they are today. And, you know, mothers depended on them for everything from Band-Aids to baby oil. And so he wanted to do everything he possibly could to assure that the rest of the company was sound and that they were going to do the right thing about the Tylenol situation. The first thing that he did was, without having to do so, the government did not order Johnson & Johnson to take all the Tylenol off shelves. One of the first decisions he made was that he ordered that every Tylenol in the United States would be recalled. It cost him $150 million. And he also vowed that that they were going to come back with a package that was as risk-proof as you possibly could make a package. The one thing that we were all concerned about was that not only was the drug, over-the-counter drug companies vulnerable, but really every grocery store was vulnerable. What happened was that the perpetrators, and they haven't been caught yet, five of them.
This is Tom Laurie. You're listening to the Mentors Radio Show. Today I'm talking to Harold Burson about persuasion. Continue, Harold.
The perpetrators could very easily have gone to the bread section and with a needle could put the arsenic in the bread a lot easier than taking apart a Tylenol package and putting it back together again. So it was a really serious situation because this unintended consequence was in the background and everybody was thinking of the whole food system could be put into jeopardy because they were afraid that some disgruntled people would do some copycatting and repeating it. The other thing about Jim was that he took charge of it himself. He devoted about 6 weeks of his time. He left his own office and took over the biggest conference room and, in effect, had a war room where everybody collected every morning about 6 o'clock in the morning, which they did till about 10 o'clock at night, figuring some of these things out. We did such things as did research every day to find out on a daily basis how the public felt about how Johnson & Johnson was was handling the situation. And one of the things that the very daring things that he did, Mike Wallace called him to go on 60 Minutes. And most of his business associates advised him not to do it because, you know, 60 Minutes usually wants to nail somebody. And I told him, I said, you know, I think Mike Wallace will respect you. And I might say that one of the greatest assets that Burke had was that he was a grown-up Boy Scout, Eagle Scout. You know, he just came on the television screen like someone that you believed, and he looks like sincere, nice guy. And I felt that he would handle himself very well. And I talked to Wallace before and interviewed him, and I came away with the impression that Wallace was going to treat him fairly, and he did. And whereas the improvement in public attitudes was going up very slowly, it jumped about 10 or 15 points couple of days after the broadcast on 60 Minutes. One thing, at about that time, the satellite had just come into play, and we suggested we wanted this to be a front-page story on every major newspaper in the United States. And so we arranged for for the top 30 markets. We had satellite connections with them, and they broadcast it on the radio and TV. And we had two stories on Tylenol that next morning. One about the fact that he had done the broadcast, and the other one was about this is the first time that satellite had been used for a press conference.
We're going to have to cut to our final break, and I'm going to ask you, Harold, if you could stay on for an extra 10 minutes after we finish this show. And we're going to have an extra feature that we'll offer our listeners that we'll post online, because I want to come back and talk about the building of the business, and we're going to run out of time. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about social media today and challenges for public relations. We're talking with Harold Burson.
And now, back to the Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Loren. I'm talking to Harold Burson, who's considered to be the most influential person of modern times. He is the founder of Burson Marsteller, one of the largest public relations agencies in the world. It's really hard to believe that time is coming to a close. And before it does, I think a great question for you has to do with the challenges today with the 24/7 news cycle, social media. You no longer have a top-down system of delivering information. How are you recommending to others they handle this current situation?
With great care. You have to look at the digital age as a continuum that started with Gutenberg's press in the 15th century. And that is a distribution system on how do you get information out to people. And that cycle, you know, lasted 200-300 years, and the telegram came, and then the radio and the movies and broadcast, and then the television and then cable, and finally we get up to the digital age, which of course is the most powerful of all of those, because number one, it is very economical to get messages out to not thousands, but millions or even billions of people. And it is very easily to penetrate the public and get your message across. And the other thing is that everybody is a reporter now if he wants to be or she wants to be. So you have to be very, very careful in what you put out, and you have to be very careful in defending yourself. In those early days, it was not quite as sophisticated as it was today. I think television, digital, probably was more positive with Johnson & Johnson than it would have been today, and that's because the hackers weren't nearly as sophisticated back then as they are now. But still, it was something that we took into great consideration.
Okay, well, Harold, we've run out of time. We could spend hours. We're going to do a Mentors Radio Extra Time, and our listeners can go online to listen to another 10 minutes where we're going to talk about the building of Burson Marsteller. You can order Harold's new book, Persuasion, by going to our website, www.mentorsradio.com. Mentorsradio.com. When there, please subscribe to future shows. Charles, thanks for joining us. That's Charles Versace.
And thank you.
Join me next weekend at this time for the next edition of the Mentors Radio. Until then, on behalf of Rick Brutico and myself, Tom Laurie, be all that you can be and keep the candle lit for all who struggle in the darkness.
It's been The Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business. To get more information about the program or a sponsor, to download a podcast of today's show, or to leave a question for our host, go to thementorsradio.com. That's www.thementorsradio.com. The preceding program, copyright CBJ LLC. All rights reserved.